Hello, everyone, and welcome to the American Ninja Warrior Recap Podcast for RHAP. I am your host, Taryn Armstrong, and today we are joined by a very special guest. It is Noah Kaufman of the Wolfpack Ninjas. Noah, how are you?
Oh, it's so good to be here, Taryn. Thanks so much. This is an awesome show you guys got.
Thank you.
Yes, and also we have, of course, Lita, who is here every week. Lita, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be doing this. Finally got it all together.
This is very exciting. I have been a big fan of Noah and the Wolfpack for a few years now, ever since they were introduced to the show. So I'm super excited. I'm giddy in my seat right now that I'm getting to talk to Noah Kaufman about the Indianapolis Finals episode.
Yes.
Where the Wolfpack competed.
Oh, it was a great show for the Wolfpack. It was a good show.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was very fun to watch. Let's run through this course, this Indianapolis Finals course. First we had, you know, as usual, floating steps. Then we had the rolling log, which just seems so brutal, especially in this finals course. I don't know why, but we had a lot of these finalists fail on the rolling log, which was very interesting. Then we had the flywheels, which had increased difficulty because there were only two wheels this time. Disc runner, again, where they have to run across these two spinning circles, little donut things. It's been pointed out that I'm terrible at describing obstacles. and there's a pole in the middle of the first one. The pole has been cut in half to increase the difficulty. Then we run into the swinging spikes. Again, more difficult. There's less of them. They're further apart. Then the warped wall, as always. Into the salmon ladder, then into the hourglass drop. And this is the obstacle that killed a ton of ninjas back in, I think it was the LA qualifying course last year, the year before.
Right.
The trampoline is just very, very difficult to hit.
I remember it was a total ninja killer. And this year I talked to my wolves about it and some of the other ninjas. And everybody was super intimidated when they saw it. And, you know, but the show actually gave them the opportunity to, on the second night, they put a practiced one up. And so they let people actually practice that obstacle, which is very rare, almost never happens.
Yeah, I mean, that trampoline, I feel like, is so daunting for so many people, because that's one of those things where it's not an unknown factor, but it's something that you can really just hit 1 centimeter off and it can send you just totally flying in the wrong direction. You just, I feel like, have less control over it than so many other things.
Each trampoline has a slightly different feel to it. You have to bounce to this kind of accuracy target that is up and out a little bit. And if you don't know, if your legs don't know and they're not familiar with the trampoline, yeah, I mean, daunting's a great word, Lita. I mean, it's a really scary obstacle. I wish I had had the opportunity to try it. It looked super fun, actually.
Yeah, it reminds me, the second half of it reminds me of, what is it, the floating boards from the second stage, where you just have to grab both sides and it tilts, and then you have to make that jump. And a lot of people failed there on that transition. So very difficult obstacle, the hourglass drop. Next is the new obstacle, the circuit board, and there was a lot of hype around this obstacle. I've got to say, I liked it. I thought the hype was somewhat warranted. I liked the idea that it was sort of like a more cerebral obstacle where there's, different paths to take, and you had to be very aware of which path you were going to take, as well as physically able to, get yourself all the way across.
Right.
So how it worked was, they had to hold on to these little, like, hook-like things, with big balls at the top of them. One was a big ball, one was a small ball, and, those balls fit into the holes, different holes. This is, very mature podcast. So it was basically like a big puzzle.
Like a maze.
Yeah, like a big maze. Yes, exactly. And you had to make your way all the way across. Lita, what did you think of this obstacle?
I loved this obstacle. And I don't think that I've said that so far about a new obstacle this whole season. I love puzzles, just like on a personal level. And I just really like this idea of having, you know, the whole course is mental in a way. You know, you have to keep your mental acuity and you have to keep your calm and all this stuff. But this was the most outwardly mental, like you said, cerebral challenge that we've had. And I really like that, because you have to keep your mind sharp. You have to keep you know, obviously your L's, as we always say. And it just like really combines those two things. And it makes it so that you can't just gas out physically, but you cannot gas out mentally to stay on this obstacle. And I just really liked that. It required you to have a plan.
One of the interesting things about this obstacle is it actually was a ninja who created it. And it's one of the Eastern gyms. One of the ninjas came up with this obstacle, and the show kind of took it on, because they're getting their ideas from some of the ninjas nowadays. And so it's a really incredible obstacle that was kind of ninja-nuity, you know?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. It's something that I thought was really cool about this was that it seemed like the rock climbers in particular had had an advantage here, because I feel like you guys are used to being in a situation where you're being physically taxed, but also you have to be very mentally aware of your next move and where you are right now.
Right.
It seemed like in particular you Wolfpack people, those guys had an easier time, but they were able to conquer this obstacle with more ease than the other athletes.
Yeah, certainly this is something that we are constantly training, and you know, we're training solving puzzles and doing things where you have to figure out new sequences while you're extremely tired. And then we also train for endurance. And so this was right up our alley. I think those guys were pretty excited when they saw it. And yeah, I mean, without blowing too much of the episode up front, I was surprised not everybody made it through, type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about rock climbing is that you always do have to be thinking many steps ahead, and you have to plan out a path in your head that you can execute. And that's exactly what this obstacle tested.
Right.
Yeah. And so finally, we have the invisible ladder, as always. Very, very difficult obstacle.
We've done it in practice numerous times. And one of our friends on ATS is actually the guy who devised that devilish obstacle. And he used climbing gear, basically to create the friction that when you bring the ring up, it cams and locks the rope, and then it holds tight while you lift up the other, you know, ring. And so it's really kind of an ingenious and diabolical obstacle. And so we've definitely trained it at home and set it up almost exactly and done it at the end of courses. And it's hard on your arms. It's amazing. Your arms give out before your grip gives out. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think Lita was just telling me last episode that it seemed physically impossible the way that it was set up. So we now have some insight into that.
Yeah. I say that about a lot of obstacles, I feel like.
Yeah, the obstacles are pretty amazing. They do a great job.
All right, so getting into the athletes. Our first athlete was Drew Knopp, the 21-year-old exercise physiology student. This is the guy. His brother Dalton had leukemia. He had watched the show since he was 16, state champion on the rings. He'd been training since he was 17 to be on the show. I had very high hopes for Drew Knopp, and I was very disappointed to see him as the first person, to run this course for this episode. But we did get a whole little segment about Akbar's brother, who apparently visited Drew's brother in the hospital. What did you think of that, Lita?
Yeah, I mean, this was very surprising to me. But I always like when we get a little bit of background into, you know, them being big fans or having a history with the show. We always like that. So this was a crazy connection. Akbar's brother used to be a Green Bay Packer. They live in that area. So yeah, little keeping it in the family, in the American Ninja Warrior family.
Yeah. And so he takes on this course and he gets to the rolling log. And it seemed like the announcers immediately called out, like, oh, the rolling log, it's a dangerous one. It really throws you around. And I was like, uh-oh, is this where he goes out? And yes, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. Akbar and Matt are really good guys. And it's cool to see them doing, you know, reaching out. And they're a real part of the ninja community. I mean, they definitely are constantly doing good deeds, and they're kind of ninjas and superheroes in their own right. And yeah, I kind of felt the same way once I heard them talking about the spinning log. I was like, uh-oh, yeah. And then I had also heard from a bunch of our training partners and, you know, the other wolves, that that thing is crazy. It is like super high force, super G forces. And it's just, you have no idea where you are. And it's kind of, it almost seemed to be, you know, luck, whether or not it threw you backwards into the water or threw you up and over onto the mat, which I think we saw. So yeah, crazy.
Yeah. I remember that, I think it was a couple of years ago, they modified the obstacle to make, I think they may have made it smaller, but they definitely made sure that it rolled faster than it used to, or than it did when they had, you know, taken it from the original Sasuke course.
Right.
And it seems like that is still absolutely in effect, where it just really flings you around. I can't imagine. That must be one of the more difficult and, you know, scary obstacles that they have to face in any of these courses.
Yeah, I've never tried it, and it looks insane. And I know that the moment you stand up, you are completely disoriented, discombobulated, and your balance is way off. So what I told the guys, you know, being a physician, I kind of knew a trick, a little hack for that. And I told the guys, you know, if you spin one way super, super fast, the fluid in your semicircular canals in your ears, it spins with you. And that's why you get out of balance. So if you spin the other way a couple times, you can try this at home. It instantly corrects your balance. So we saw people up on the platform doing that. I think that beta, you know, that method spread like wildfire.
Yeah. We saw a few people do that.
Yeah. The first time that I saw Megan Martin doing that, I thought that she was like doing little dance or something, because sometimes people do that. And I was like, that's not very Megan. Like, she never does that. And then everybody started doing it. So yeah, that's very educational on this podcast. We're teaching people science words.
All right. So next up is Tyler Yamauchi, the 30-year-old physical therapist. It is pointed out that he is the shortest person. He was the shortest person up the new taller warped wall at 5'1". He had been doing gymnastics since he was 3 and held the world record for the Iron Cross. Yeah. I don't know if that was a junior world record or just like the world record, but either way, very impressive. And he said that he was inspired by Casey after she made it up the warped wall to give it a go himself. He was scared that, you know, he wouldn't be able to get up the warped wall because of his height. But after he saw Casey do it, he thought, you know what? I can do this too.
Yeah, no excuses.
Yeah, this guy was incredible. And what we look for, you know, when we're evaluating how good the rest of the competition is we look at how people move. And, you know, of course, this guy's strong and Tyler was a powerhouse. He's a little powerhouse, but the gymnasts, they don't always move perfectly. We haven't seen gymnasts absolutely dominate in general, but he moved his body really well and flew through the air and just understood his, you know, what he could do and what his limits were. And then, yeah, he just crushed the warp wall and he was, you know, he's a little guy out there, but he's a little powerhouse. He's like the flea or something. He's just an animal.
Yeah, I noticed his body control as well. And he has like this incredible arm strength where he can't even wrap his legs all the way around the rolling log and still manages to hang on. But on top of that, he doesn't just use his brute strength. We saw this amazing body control on the flywheels. And he just, yeah, he knows how to keep control of it. And I was worried that he would go out on the salmon ladder, actually, because I thought that maybe he didn't quite have the technique for that type of thing. But he really proved himself.
Yeah, it was interesting to me that you could see his left hand. I think it was his left hand that gave out. And, you know, what's interesting is he's got so much muscle. And I'm wondering if he had trained just for endurance. I don't think there would have been any stopping him. I think he would have finished the whole course. And the other part of endurance is how well you relax. And, you know, maybe he was just, it's so easy to go out there and, you know, try harder than you think you need to and grip on harder.
Yeah. And he manages to qualify for Vegas, even though he was only the second runner, makes it all the way to the hourglass drop, as you mentioned. But yeah, just slipped a little bit there. We did get a few funny Akbarisms in his run. He's the first person we see almost fall into the center of that first disc runner disc thing. And Akbar goes, oh, right there in the genitals.
Oh my God.
I didn't see him getting hit in the genitals,
oh
but
my God.
Apparently Akbar did.
Oh, man.
And
graphic.
Yeah. And also, right at the warped wall, Akbar says, Mom always told me that big things come in little packages. This guy's got a big bang to him. Very true. Yeah.
And how could you not mention Yamauchi is Gucci?
I didn't hear that one.
That's a classic. I thought that was going to be the one you brought up.
You know, I was hearing those other ones. I must have missed it.
Yeah, well, that's why this is a multiple person operation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. What would I do without you? First montage is up next. And first in that montage is Zach Kemmerer, the biochemistry student who discovered H2O at the floating steps. I thought that was a pretty good one.
Disagree.
next was Kevin Hogan, the tax accountant who is out at the rolling log. And Akbar says, ooh, he couldn't file for an extension. And then finally, Alex Benz, who is a walk-on. He fails at the flywheels. Seems like he would have beaten the easier version, but unfortunately was unable to because of the more difficult one.
Yes.
All right. Next up is Eric Middleton, the 24-year-old entomology student. His package is all about insects. did you like this package, Lita?
I have never fast-forwarded an entire package before until this episode. I'm sorry, Taryn knows that about me, but for the listeners, I am completely terrified of bugs. All bugs. It doesn't matter what they are. I have a terrible phobia, so I completely fast-forwarded this. I'm sorry, Eric.
Did you at least hear Matt say that Eric's family was bugging out?
I did. I watched his run. I didn't catch that. I think I was focused.
It was at the tail end of the package.
Oh, well, there you go. I think I was focused on how often they were calling him a dung beetle, which I was like, of all bugs.
Yeah. So for a counterpoint, my son absolutely loved this. He absolutely loved it. I mean, this was like his favorite one. He's like, I like this guy. I want to see the bug guy. Well, I hope the bug guy does well. My 4-year-old son, you know, so.
I'm always a fan of the scientists. Anyone that's into science and stuff like that. I'm not a huge bug person either, to be honest, but I appreciated the effort. He says that insects are the ultimate athletes. Yeah, maybe.
We've never had an insect, American Ninja Warrior.
Hey, they may have been running when we just didn't see them.
The insects? Yeah, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, he does fine. I learned some other things about him, which is that he did ballroom dancing to meet girls in college.
Yeah, I wrote that down too.
I thought that was weird that they mentioned that.
It's genius.
Yeah, I guess so.
It must have worked.
As long as he didn't bring bugs with him to the practices.
He was pretty good though, right?
Oh yeah, he was very good. Yeah. He makes it all the way to the hourglass drop, and he is the first person, or not the first person, but the first person to fail at the transition of the hourglass drop, trying to make the transition to the second, what is it called? The
board.
Unstable bridge thing.
Oh.
Yes, he fails to make that transition and goes down. Akbar says, as he's running, I hope he sipped on some of that dung beetle juice because he'll need that type of strength here. Because dung beetles, they're super strong.
Yeah, and Beetlejuice is a movie. It's like a very loose connection. Not Akbar's best.
But Akbar makes those. He makes the connections work.
Yeah, that's true. That's what he's best at.
He's amazing at that. he gives us plenty of material every single episode.
Yeah.
So next up is Dr. Oh, and by the way, Eric Middleton did qualify for Vegas, making it to the hourglass drop. And so next we have Dr. John Murray Adams, the 38-year-old optometrist. We join him in the middle of his run at the flywheels. And as he dismounts from the flywheels, he lands like face first and is just like, oh, right in the face. Face plant, says Akbar. Yeah, really crazy dismount there. What, like, Noah, you must have some experience with this. Like, how do you get over that? If you have something like that where you like totally botch a dismount and like you're totally shaken up, but you have to move on, you have to face this next obstacle. Like, what do you do there?
You have to completely ignore it, have to move on. I mean, you know, you're in this situation where you have to focus on the next obstacle. And unless you're broken and you can't do it, you're just so psyched to be out there that you're just like, okay, that didn't happen. Let's keep moving. Let's do this. And yeah, one year when I was in my gold suit, I almost slipped off the icy quad steps or quint steps or whatever down into the drink. And I got past that and I was like, okay, that didn't happen. Let's keep going. And I ended up finishing the finals first.
Yeah. How do you feel about another Dr. Ninja on the same night as the Wolfpack?
The more ninja docs, the better. I think that, yeah, it's lonely out there being the only ninja who's a doc, and it's good. There's actually another ER ninja doc out there, Rich Schumacher. There's a couple of them, actually. And yeah, no, the more docs, the better. My buddy, Matt Wilder, who's on my team for Team Ninja Warrior, he is also a PhD in computer science. So yeah, the more the merrier.
Nice. Yeah, this was when I really noticed that the lack of bungees on the spikes really made a difference. That didn't really like register with me, but he just could not get this thing to swing because it only swings left and right. The spikes don't swing back and forth like they did in qualifying. So that's where he really went wrong here.
Yeah, so yeah, he ends up failing at the swinging spikes, and that's where he failed in qualifying. He probably could have gotten through this if it was the easier version, because I imagine that he did improve, but unfortunately it was more difficult, and he does fail here. There goes Dr. John Murray Adams. Next up was PJ Granger, the 29-year-old concrete worker, not a concrete barber, a concrete worker.
It's last time he said barber. Or is this a different guy?
I think this is a different guy.
God, okay.
Okay. He was a walk-on last year and made it to Vegas. I saw him on the course here seeming a little bit clumsy, but like clearly very, very strong. But that clumsiness seemed to sort of catch up to him at the disc runner, and he slips right off the edge. What did you think of PJ?
Well, I know that he was in Pittsburgh last year. I always remember the people who ran in Pittsburgh. And they talked about him showering in the river when he was in the walk-on line. And listen, Pittsburgh has done a lot to become a greener city, but I don't even know people who dip their feet in the river. So showering in our rivers, that is disgusting. And so I was just thinking about that the whole time he was running. I liked his little story about how he's now like a local celebrity and he has kids like sign his shirt, and then he brings a shirt with him, although he did not wear the shirt while running. So that was kind of weird. We didn't really even see the shirt. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is a disappointing run for someone who is at least sort of memorable for me. But, you know, I'm sure we'll see him back.
It was kind of strange that he talked a lot about the shirt, and then it was like, but I can't, you know, wear it while I run. Like,
yeah.
Why not?
Must be shirtless.
Next up is our second montage. First in that montage is Bryce Foley, the police officer that was dismissed at the flywheels. And this was kind of a twofer. He was dismissed at the flywheels, and then we got the live audio, and he was also busted by the flywheels. So... which one works better for you, Lita?
Definitely dismissed, because cops don't get busted. That doesn't make any sense.
Nice.
So I think that Akbar should pick one and stick to it.
I think both of them might have been Matt, actually.
Oh, that's wild.
Because Matt usually reads out the montage things.
Oh, man.
Next up was Fred Thorne, who was out at the swinging spikes. No joke in particular there. And then finally, Tyler Smith, the pet control technician that was exterminated by the hourglass drop. However, despite this, does manage to qualify for Vegas. Next up is Lita's favorite athlete of all time, Andrew Ruiori, the 39-year-old lab technician. He is Lita's favorite because he's a big dog rescuer. He's the guy who trained a champion frisbee sport dog thing. Lita can speak to this better than I can.
Well, first of all, usually when Taryn says that it's my favorite athlete, he's being sarcastic, but this time it's actually true. I love this guy. He rescues a ton of dogs. He always brings his geriatric Labrador Labrador Angus to watch him run the course. And he's also a scientist. So this is some common ground for us, Taryn. But he adopted a pit bull that with the pit bull is now a champion Frisbee dog team. He also adopted another pit bull from the Michael Vick fighting ring, and he wears a shirt that encourages people to adopt dogs. He's really there to raise awareness for adoption. And his package was all about how those efforts have paid off. And a lot of people, he feels like, have been inspired by him to adopt animals. And this is a cause that is very, very close to my heart. So I am always rooting for this guy.
Yeah, he's legit. He is a very authentic guy. And I think he's a very easy guy to root for, right? I mean, he's like, I don't know. It's not some like reach cause. He's definitely there, and you can tell he like loves these animals, and he's a really good ninja too. He's really fun to watch. I thought he was great.
Most importantly, let's get to the nitty gritty here. Air Bud would be jealous of Ruyori, says Matt, after the flywheels. And then, Akbar chimes in and says, Michael Jordan would also be jealous. So lots to be jealous of with Ruyori.
Yeah, 'cause those are comparable athletes, Michael Jordan and Air Bud.
Air Bud, greatest athlete of all time. Let's face it.
I mean, he was like a five sport athlete. Michael Jordan only played like basketball and kind of baseball. So, right? I've seen Space Jam. I know sports.
This was definitely a stronger performance by Ruyori than even his qualifying run. In his qualifying run, he seemed to just kind of barely get up the warped wall. This time, flies right up it. He gets all the way to the hourglass drop, but his jump veers off to the right. He gets the right height, but he's not able to grab onto the board because he's too far to the right, and he goes down. Were you crying in this moment, Lita?
I was crying a little bit during his package just because I cry when I see dogs. But I mean, this was one of those things where I was really disappointed at first, but I think I quickly realized, as probably most people did, that the hourglass drop is going to be the obstacle. Like every qualifying or every city finals course we talk about the obstacle to beat, and it's usually the second to last or the third to last obstacle. It's never just like the invisible ladder. So this very quickly became the obstacle that I was thinking a ton of people are going to go out on here. He had a very decent time, so I was definitely holding on hope the whole episode. And I kept getting frustrated when they would cut to commercial and not show all the standings, which I've never like paid attention to before. But they would only show the top five people every time.
Yes, and we do eventually find out that he is the one on the bubble as we watch the final competitor run, and he does barely manage to make it in. And we will talk more about that when we talk about the final run. But very happy for Ruyori. And Christine, in her interview with him, says, pets are everything. So you're basically best buds.
Christine and I, we get each other, you know? I feel you, Christine.
It was funny how she was like, no offense, but I was looking at the dog.
Yeah.
And you hear, she was like, no offense, Rue, but, you know, I was checking out Angus, and he was, like, watching you. And, like, you know, I thought that was pretty funny.
Me too, Christine.
It was, I thought that was the most adorable part of his whole run, was the fact that the dog was, like, watching him throughout the entire thing.
Yeah. I love you, master.
Yeah.
Don't fall into the water.
I would bring my cat to the American Ninja Warrior run. I don't think she would care as much as Angus did, though.
All right, next we have another montage, and first up was Ben Jackson, who was bounced by the hourglass drop. Akbar says he was miles away, and I wrote in parentheses, Akbar sounded very distressed when he said that. He was miles away! No! Despite this, though, he does qualify for Vegas. Next up is Dan Banura, who failed on the transition for the hourglass drop, and as he went down, Akbar said, Shanana.
Which
I don't even know what this refers to.
I know, but they said it last week, but the guy's name was Sean, so it made sense at least a little bit.
Maybe Benura, Shana. Yeah, I don't know. No, but also there. Qualifies for Vegas, so maybe we'll be seeing more of him. Finally, Dan Yeager, the salon owner who is washed out on the Rolling Log. Rolling Log, taking more victims.
Okay, so Dan Yeager trains with us constantly. One of the Wolfpack guys, basically.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, and so he's from Fort Collins, where I'm at, and he's an incredible rock climber. He's been my partner for the last couple years. He's one of my main climbing partners, and he is incredible. He was the rookie of the year last year, pretty much made it the furthest out of all the rookies last year, getting to the end of stage two. And we really thought he was a dark horse and that he could actually be one of the contenders. Like, you know, we always have in our minds, who are the top 20 guys? Like, who are the guys who could actually do this course? And Yeager's on that list, and we were so surprised and bummed for him when he went out. And, you know, he had no idea where he was, and man, that thing just, you know, he really was like, I couldn't believe it. I was all of a sudden spit out of there. I had no idea where I was. It was like you're in a washing machine or, a tumble dryer. And so it was really kind of surprising. And it was a bummer for all of us to see one of our good buddies and one of the best ninjas out there get taken out like that.
Yeah, I remembered him from last year, and I was very disappointed to see him go out this early. Did he talk about, like, when he's on the log, is it that he let go and it was the wrong moment, or was he kind of flung off at the end? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so it keeps going faster and faster, and the best that we can determine is based on your body size. That's how many rotations it has based on, you know, your mass, because it does slide and slip a little bit. And when you get to the very bottom, you're going so fast, you have no idea where you are. And you know, you can feel when it hits at the very bottom. And generally in the past, the mat has been long enough where if you feel that it's hit at the bottom, then you just kind of get let go and it doesn't matter where you fly off. But this year they shortened the mat so that you had to basically hold on. And he didn't realize that. You know, he's a climber. His grip, yeah, grip was strong, but you're going so fast, you're like, you know, in a totally different universe. You've got no idea what's going on. So it was a big surprise to him. I don't think he felt pumped at all, but it's such a bummer when you hit that water. You're like, what happened? Oh, I can't believe this. You know, sad.
We've talked about that before, where it seems like the times where you go out where it wasn't that you were just too tired to go on or that your endurance failed, but like there was just like some small little mistake or just like freak of nature kind of thing. Like those seem to be the hardest kinds of fails because you know you had more in you and it was just like you get taken out of nowhere.
Right.
It must be so difficult to get over that.
It's tough. All the ninjas want to find their limit, right? They want to pump out or see where they fail based on like failure. But when you fall on something that is like a little slip or a little mistake or luck, or like you said, it does make it hard to deal with, especially when you've been training nonstop 30 hours a week for months at a time. It's tough to watch it all end in a single moment.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. But we must move on to Ethan Swanson, the 26-year-old data analyst. He had been hyped up all episode long. He makes daredevil videos, some crazy ones. They showed that one where he jumps off of a rooftop onto a slanted rooftop and onto like some spiral staircase thing. Very, very, very good video, actually. That was
mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Taryn, you want to know the craziest thing of all? Is that I've actually seen one of his videos. It wasn't this one, but every time we have someone that they say is like a YouTube sensation or social media sensation, I have never heard of them. I have actually seen one of this guy's videos. I didn't know that it was him, but it's one where he's like hanging from a roof. Like someone is like holding on to him. And they showed like a little clip of it on the show, but that's not the one that they like really focused on. But yes, it looks terrifying. I'm not even afraid of heights in that video. Like really, like, weirds me out.
Well, you are now officially more plugged in than I am.
Yeah, officially, finally.
He was really impressive. Really impressive.
Super impressive. Yeah. Just throughout the entire thing, like his grip strength, his control, like his confidence throughout the run. Akbar says, yeah, on the swinging spikes, ooh, that is YMCA going on over there, because he's reaching across.
And also because he also performs at NBA games. We talked about this last time, so maybe that was a reference to that. I don't know. He does dunks at Chicago Bulls halftime games.
Yeah, Akbar was reaching there for sure.
Yes. I was trying to connect it to like entertainment. I don't know.
Well, Akbar also says, look at him. He's too cool for school on the salmon ladder because he was so confident, so cool, calm and collected. Very good run by Ethan.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that I liked watching this so much was because I think you used the word scary to talk about the rolling log earlier, Taryn. Like some of these obstacles like really are like, it seems like it would be like kind of frightening. Like you could hurt yourself, especially ones that are as unpredictable as the rolling log. And this is someone who kind of has the advantage of running this course without fear. Like he can jump off these huge buildings and roofs and stuff, and he can do all these crazy feats. So he maybe doesn't really have that anxiety about like, you know, falling in and hurting himself or something like that, that like any normal rational person would have. He's kind of like overcome that part of his brain somehow. So this is really fun to watch for me.
Yeah, definitely. He is the first person we see clear the hourglass drop and the first person we see to take on the circuit board. And he makes it all the way through the circuit board. The first person to take it on, and he makes it all the way through. I really thought that when he goes for an early dismount there, I really thought he was going to fail the dismount or something. But he does manage to make it through and gets all the way up the invisible ladder. But just one of the rings slips out from his fingers right at the end and just goes down. I was surprised. I thought he was going to make it.
Yeah, this was the first time we've seen someone get to the invisible ladder and fail this season. I mean, we've only had two episodes, but that's correct,
this
right?
This is our third episode.
With the, yes, you're right.
And they mentioned that this was the farthest anyone has ever gotten, the closest anyone's ever gotten with failing. And yeah. His fingers literally came undone. I mean, he tried his absolute hardest, and it was a brilliant performance. And, you know, maybe he could have made it in some alternate timeline, some alternate universe. He literally, all he had to do is put his feet up there or something like a bunch of the ninjas have been doing. And he was so, so close. I thought it was also interesting how he kept his arms straight on the circuit board, which is a really great technique. And he did a great job of it. It shows a lot of shoulder strength and flexibility, but yeah, outstanding performance, really standing ovation for him. Unbelievable.
Yeah. There aren't a ton of obstacles that you can do dead hanging. A lot of the time you need those L's, but if you have that dead hang and can just do that, for, you know, in a really long period of time, the circuit board is one of those obstacles where you can do that.
Yeah. Noah, do you know, like, what is the difference in approach for something like an obstacle like that, where you can try to do it with, you know, your arms bent in those L's that Akbar calls them, or do them straight? Like how do you approach that?
Well, I think if you're taller, like I am, it's a no brainer and you keep your arms straight. You can do it with bent arms. And if you've got gas in the tank, that's a good way to do it. But if you know that you've got the invisible ladder coming up, if your arms are a little bit longer, then you have a lot bigger range. So a smaller guy like, you know, Tyler, the short gymnast guy, he probably would have kept his arms bent and that would have given him more reach. But, you know, generally I spoke with a couple of the other guys about it, and there were some trick parts to it where there were different size balls and you could actually put the ball in the wrong maze part. And so I think that you really had to take your time and think about it, which meant if you could keep your arms straight, you'd have a lot longer, because basically the handle is a huge jug and we're used to hanging on to handles like that for, you know, minute or two at a time at the end of our workouts.
Interesting. So yes, he does fail there on the invisible ladder, but does of course qualify for Vegas. And next up we get the man, the myth, the legend, Ian Dory, the 25-year-old business student and Wolfpack member. He even was wearing his Wolfpack shirt.
Yes.
When he ran, which I thought was awesome. Something that was pointed out for Ian was that he's finished every city finals course he's ever attempted, and he does not disappoint here. He keeps that streak going. Noah, what sort of insight do you have on Ian's run here?
Yeah, well, Ian, you know, Ian, like everybody, gets nervous. Ian's dealing with a different set of tools. He is literally in the top, you know, 0.1% of rock climbers in the world. He's a world champion. He's unbelievable. He's basically an Olympic level climber. And so he's, you know, he's better than anyone else in the Wolfpack. Like Brian and I, we're like national class. And even Isaac is, you know, Isaac was, you know, part of the Wolfpack, and he's, you know, more of a national class climber versus Ian is like a world class climber. And so he's just an outstanding athlete. And so, you know, he said he fell in a couple times, and I saw it. You know, he almost fell through the hole.
Yeah,
just
scary.
Like that Tyler did. Yeah, it was totally scary. But no, I mean, he dominated. As you know, this stuff is really not that hard for Ian. It's only, you know, he doesn't get that tired. He's really an incredible athlete. It's unbelievable. I mean, and he's so young that he's got such a bright future. I mean, he'll probably finish several of the American Ninja Warrior courses in his career. I can almost guarantee it.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly kept us on the edge of our seats for this run. It was not only an amazing run, but also a very entertaining run because he had a couple of very close calls with the water.
Yeah, he certainly did.
First thing I noticed with Ian this time around was that I really like the haircut. It's really working for him.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. Yeah. Ever since you pointed out James McGrath's hair, I've been paying attention to all the guys' hair, so I don't look like so I don't look like a fool again when I don't know what you're talking about.
I thought I would stump you here, but no, you got me. Yeah, I liked his hair.
Yeah.
And also during his run, this was one of my favorite Akbarisms. On the swinging spikes, he says, "You can post this on Instagram because he's looking picture perfect right now with no filter."
Akbar.
That's Ian Dory.
Yeah, we love you, Akbar.
We see him take on the circuit board. And as I sort of mentioned at the top of the show, he makes this look like child's play. Like he just floated through there. And I remember that Ian Dory is the guy who made, what is it? Yeah. Area 51. Yeah. I remember he was one of the first people to take that on. And I remember that he made that look so easy, even though there's no way it's easy at all. Ian, he's just so good that he makes these things look so easy. He does them with such ease. Just incredible athlete. And, I love, he plays to the crowd before the invisible ladder, clearly very confident, very, very strong still, and, flies just right up that thing and clears the course. Fantastic run.
Yeah,
he's incredible. Funny story. He was wearing the shirt and we were all talking about, we should all wear the shirts. And he's the only one who ended up wearing the Wolfpack shirt. Brian didn't wear it because he wanted his skin to be able to touch the rolling log because he was scared that the shirt would make it too slippery and that he could fall off. And Megan's was just too baggy. And she was like, "I can't wear it. It's too baggy." So the wolf pup wore a shirt.
I noticed that he was the only one wearing the shirt. I was like, hey, I wonder why they're not wearing it. But, you know, now we know.
He really, on the circuit board, when he was doing it, it reminded me of the obstacle that we saw in this spot last week where you swung from the flying monkey bars. Is that what they were? Where you kind of placed the rung in the little cradle and you needed all this patience and dexterity. And Ian really showed how to do that, how to wait until you know where to put the ball before you do it. And that will ultimately save you a lot of time if you have just a little bit of patience, because you're not just kind of like fumbling around, because if you do it wrong, that ends up being a lot harder because it will fall through the thing.
Yes. Very, very impressive. Next we have another montage. And in this montage, we have Jonathan Cooley, the auto worker who ran out of gas at the swinging spikes. Brandon Mears, the first half of the Towers of Power. He apparently looked brotastic on the first half of the course, but fails at the salmon ladder. It looks like he fails right at that top rung. And this is another one of those, like, just small little mistakes. He just goes down and that's it. That's it for him in American Ninja Warrior for this season. Unfortunate for him. I've noticed with these pairs, they keep showing one of the pair. Like the Brazzi bros. We just saw, Dan instead of Brandon. For good reason this time, Dan is the one that makes it a little bit further, which is the opposite of what happened last time. Dan Palizzi, the 34-year-old firefighter, he finally gets this package, and it has both Dan and Brandon, and it's just, I said, bro package. That was about the gist of it.
I literally wrote Brazzy Brothers style editing. I thought that this was weird that they did like a comedy sketch for their package, right? Like there was like a bunch of puns and it was, I don't know. I also felt really dumb because I feel like for years I've thought that these guys were actually brothers and I just never made the connection to me that they have different last names. And then when I was writing down my notes, obviously like they have different last names. And I was like, oh, I probably should have put this together earlier. But I didn't care about this package, I feel like.
Well, I think the package was largely their submission video. I think that's why, like, they did that little sketch for their submission video.
Oh, well, there you go. That explains it.
Whenever they have a submission video they really like, they seem to feature it in the package quite a bit.
Yeah, those guys are, and they're really good guys. Just for like some behind the scenes, those guys would give you the shirt off their back. They're super, just super, super nice guys, super humble, and actually really quite funny. You know, I'm sure they're constantly giving it to each other in the firehouse or whatever, but they're really cool guys.
Definitely interesting with the bro stuff. I think what they're very good at is sort of distinguishing themselves, right? Like they're so tall, they've got this this whole thing going, the Towers of Power, they've got the bro stuff, they're firefighters, like they're very recognizable. I think they're very good at doing that. And Dan Palizzi does very well here. It's super, super smooth on the swinging spikes. He's got such great reach that he's able to just fly through there. Makes it all the way to the circuit board. And this is the first time that I even realized, because it was finally pointed out, that the balls were different sizes on those little hooks. I hadn't realized that before. And that I like that. It adds that extra layer of difficulty. Matt says, when he's on the circuit board, the fireman continues to be on fire. And then shortly after, he loses his grip and he goes down.
Well, if he were a good fireman, then he wouldn't have been on fire in the first place, yet let alone continue to be on fire. So that's a stupid thing to say.
You tell him, Lita.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those guys are going to be on Team Ninja Warrior again. Their team is coming back, and we're going to be filming that in about a month, and we're excited to see him out there. I want to race one of those guys. It's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah. That's super exciting.
Yeah. I mean, he was very impressive. I actually thought he was looking really, really strained on the salmon ladder. And I really thought that he was going to be one of those people that just kind of barely makes it to the next obstacle and then, you know, maybe enough to qualify. But he got through it. And I don't know if he got a second wind or maybe it was just that the salmon ladder was particularly difficult for him. But yeah, I was super impressed with his determination.
Super strong ninja.
Yeah, and he does qualify for Vegas, even though his other half, Brandon, does not, which is, again, the reverse of what happened last year. So hopefully they can take some solace in that. It's sad watching them have to, like, learn that news, right? Like,
yeah.
One of them is making it and the other is not. And, it's sad news to be breaking to the two of them.
Maybe he can team up with the Brazzy brother who made it. And they can be a new bro pair.
Yes.
Since they were both split from their bros.
Combine their bro powers.
Yeah, exactly.
Moving on, we've got Megan Martin, the 26-year-old rock climbing coach, Lita's hero.
I love her. Yes, everyone's hero. Come on, Taryn.
Everyone's hero. Well, I was pointing out because, you know, I know you love Rue Yori, but I think you love Megan Martin even more.
She's my favorite. I can never stop talking about Megan Martin. Yes, I let us get into this because it's amazing.
Yeah, sure. Well, she had one of these packages that was like this is like the prime real estate of packages, right? Like she gets some testimonials. She really wants to try her hand at the back half of the finals course, which she hasn't been able to do up until this point. And I felt like there's no way she's going to fail before this point. Like she has to make it there. I was really expecting big things from Megan Martin. And she does not disappoint.
Yeah. My favorite thing about this package was that she was talking about how, you know, she does get really nervous and this is a lot of pressure, but something that she tells herself is, this is fun. You're good at this. You like this. And that's something that I've never really been able to verbalize, but it's really important because I compete and sometimes competing is, you know, it's not fun. Sometimes it's just too much pressure and it's just can be a long day. And that's something that, you know, is a concise way of basically what I think every person who does competitive athletics has to tell themselves sometimes is that, like, this is fun. You're good at this. You like this, you know, you're doing this for a reason. And when you think it's not worth it, like, you just have to remember that. So I just love that she is, you know, maintains her passion for the sport, even under all that pressure.
She totally deserved this. She worked really hard this year. She's been dedicated and she has been like, I mean, beating us out in the practices. And we've been like, whoa, Megan, what's going on? You know, like she's turning it on and just so proud of her. Just so proud. She's definitely one of the strongest competitors out there, like men or women. And she just showed it. And it, you know, I mean, it's just so awesome to watch her excel and to see her do so well. And yeah, like you said, she delivered and we were really proud of Megan. And there was a lot of high fiving and we picked her up when we got home and we had a little party. She's such a superstar and it's so great to have her on our little team, you know, because she really inspires the rest of us. And we definitely are like just so impressed constantly with Megan. I love her. She's so amazing.
Yeah. I loved that shot in her package where, you were all doing the dead hangs and everyone else drops out and she's still there.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, if you want to be inspired, follow her on Instagram because her videos are ridiculous of her climbing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and if you want to follow her, you can find her from our website, wolfpackninjas.com. I forget. I think she's at, you know, Megan Martin 89 or something. On Instagram, but you can find her through our website if you want.
Yeah, she's so inspiring. I even just get a little misty-eyed hearing you talk about that because I am just so huge on, you know, women role models specifically and just, you know, barrier breakers. And this is someone who, she's my height. She's 5'3", you know, this isn't someone who just naturally has, you know, this great predisposition, like for American Ninja Warrior. Like this is someone who worked for it for so long and has to work for it maybe a little bit harder than a lot of other people. So just, yeah, really amazing.
And she carries herself really, really well too. I mean, she's very confident, but she's also very humble. And I think she's a very good role model. I mean, I definitely know some of the ninjas are a little overconfident at times. Some of the ninjas maybe don't even pay attention to the kids, but she is, you know, totally a very humble person and constantly working with kids, loving kids and going out of her way to like contact and talk with her fans. And she's just really a sweetheart and she really deserved making it and being the third woman ever to qualify legitimately for Vegas. And she just dominated. It was great to see her perform. It was beautiful.
Yeah. And you want to talk about entertaining runs. This was this was a doozy. Like almost right from the get go on those swinging spikes. The gaps are just so gigantic. And it just seemed like there's no way she's going to be able to make these gaps. But she managed to every single time. I was so impressed there right off the bat. And then she gets to the warped wall, and I noticed that in her qualifying run, she failed on her first attempt and then made it up on her second attempt. And we see something similar happen in her finals run, where she kind of stumbles in her run-up on her first two attempts on the warped wall. And this is when, you know, I think everybody's starting to get nervous, like, is she going to be able to get up there on her third attempt? Do you have any idea like what was going on, in her head, you know, in this moment?
Yeah, I know exactly what was going on in her head. It was actually, and this is a funny story that your listeners are going to appreciate. You know, there's a lot happening behind the scenes that people don't know about. And during her run, everything was wet. So you want to talk about difficult. I mean, she had a really tough course. The whole course is tough, as you know, to begin with, but it had been raining a little bit and the course was all wet. And, you know, so she put that out of her mind and she's like, I'm doing this anyways. And it's so hard to be confident when the course is wet. I know, because I fell on a wet course after a big rainstorm. But she got to the warp wall and she made her first run at it and the wall was totally wet. And you cannot do the warp wall when it's wet. And she looked around and she's like, what am I going to do? It's totally wet. She was just slipping. And so on her second try, she went and it was totally wet. And again, she didn't do it. And she's by now very good at the warp wall. Like, the warp wall is pretty easy for her, to be honest with you. And so what happened was the show took a pause. They stopped, and they don't show this on camera. And all the worker bees, all the staff came out, and they dried the wall for Megan with the towels. And then they, you know, restarted. And it was absolutely awesome. They restarted the show, and they let her go. And of course, now the wall was dry and she crushed it. It was really kind of funny behind some TV magic happening. But at the same time, it just goes to show you how difficult it is. And she still, you know, had to do it on that third try with knowing that, is it really going to be dry now? Is it still wet and impossible? So she managed to do it. It was incredible. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's crazy. I'd kind of like noted that a couple of athletes fell, like PJ Granger, when he falls off the disc runner off the side. I noted that it seemed like the platform that he was stepping on was wet, and that's kind of why he slipped. And even Ian, when Ian fell into the middle of that first disc runner thing, it seemed like he slipped because it was wet. So it's very interesting to get confirmation there that clearly the course was pretty wet, and that must have added a lot of difficulty. We saw the kind of difficulty it added in the Sasuke course when Drew Dreschel ran, and he also had to stop at the warped wall and be like, guys, it's way too wet. Ninja Warrior courses, when they get wet, that's some pretty rough stuff there.
Yeah, it gets a lot harder, and you just got to play it as it lies. Sometimes it's a bummer, and some people get unlucky. Some people have dry courses to run, some people don't. You know, they've got wet courses, and it's luck of the draw. It's the way it goes in the ninja world right now.
Yeah. My favorite part, I think, of the entire run was when she makes it up that on her third try, makes it up that warp wall. You can see in the background, Akbar is jumping up and down out of like pure delight. I thought that was great.
Adorable.
Oh, he loves her. He's got a little man crush on her. I know he does.
Oh my God. My brother barely watches the show, but he happened to walk by while I was watching and he was like, oh my God, it's her, and sat down because every year he sees me watching this and he loves Megan Martin. She just has this energy about her. She also had beautiful nails. I do want to point out, I noticed that she had really pretty nails, so she was looking her best.
She's going to be so happy to hear you say that. And I'll have her listen to the episode. So if you want to say hi to her, you should, for sure.
Oh my God. I don't even know what to say. Well, she's already heard me gush for about 7 minutes straight, but I love her bows and I love her nails. And I always notice.
Awesome.
Yes, so she makes it to the circuit board, had a weird experience here. It seemed like she went for to put one of the pegs up into the board, but missed it or pulled it back out and tried to reach back and put it in somewhere else, but couldn't. And then kind of like lost her balance and then tried to grab on with both hands to one of them. But there wasn't enough real estate there to grab on. And so she ends up falling into the water. Do you have any insight? I think she talked a little bit about it on the Wolfpack Ninja podcast, which everybody should check out. But do you know the story here, Noah?
Yeah, I mean, well, just like you said, she started to develop a swing. She was in the middle rows, and the middle rows were really tricky. The outside lanes actually were very straightforward, and she didn't know that. And she was in kind of the middle lanes, and she made a mistake and put the ball in, and instantly realized that it was a mistake, and kind of had like a panicky moment, like, oh my gosh. What can I do now? I gotta get it out of there. And I think the moment that happens, you start grabbing a lot tighter, right? It's like holding onto the edge of a cliff, like, oh my God, I can't let go. It's like death grip. And of course, that's when you get really fatigued instantly, no matter how strong you are. And she just kind of, it kind of fell apart right there for her. And it was a valiant effort, but it was really more of a mental mistake, I think, than a physical one, because she definitely could have finished that whole course like no problem.
Yeah, it really shows the sort of like devilish nature of that circuit board obstacle.
Indeed.
Yeah, just the smallest little mistake and like mental mistake, and you could be sent right out. But despite this, as we've mentioned, Meghan Martin does qualify for Vegas, becomes the third woman to ever do this. Very much looking forward to seeing her in Vegas.
Yeah, having two women to look forward to in Vegas for me is just so exciting. And two of just like the greatest women, like I can't even talk about it. I'm going to get emotional, but two women that really inspire me.
All right. So next up, we have another montage. First is Adam Stroop, who he didn't want to do the rolling log. He was like, I don't want to do this.
Understandable.
Yes. He did make it through, but then fails at the flywheels. And Matt says he wants to chalk that up to the rolling log. He was still dizzy from the rolling log. Then we have Andrew Harada Roland, the educational app developer who had no answer for the hourglass drop, did not get that bounce right off the trampoline. And then finally, Ryan Elliott, who wore out at the circuit board, but does qualify for Vegas. Then we have, of course, Brian Arnold, the 38-year-old salesman. We join him at the warped wall, so we missed the entire first half here. We missed a lot of Brian Arnold in these two episodes. He was montaged in the qualifying course, and we missed the first half in the finals, but glad to see we at least get some Brian Arnold.
Yeah, Brian's amazing. He's a total legend. I think they wanted to be careful about, you know, they are doing a TV show, and they want to be careful not to overplay too many people, you know, too many of the heroes, the legends, every single year. They don't want it to become formulaic or anything. But, I mean, Brian, everybody wants to see Brian. So it would have been nice to see the first part of his run, but it was cool to see the back half. And like a true pro, he just dominated. And Brian's incredible. He's been one of my best friends for a long, long time. We used to road trip around the country. He's the guy who got me into the show, who got me to do it. And he's just done so well. And he's at 38 years old. He's doing better, and he's just hitting his stride. I mean, he's got the experience now, and it's only a matter of time before he finishes it all. It's incredible to have him and Ian as part of the Wolfpack, as part of my training partners. Unbelievable guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Two of the top contenders for the entire show, and they're both in the Wolfpack. And I think maybe that's why, you know, I mentioned that they, you know, when there's a pair, they usually only tend to, or they're at least this season, they're only showing one of the pair. Maybe they felt like, you know, we've shown two of the Wolfpack already. We don't show the full run of the third person in the Wolfpack, but either way, we still got to see Brian Arnold, and I'm sure we're going to see a lot of him and the rest of the Wolfpack in Vegas, because, as you mentioned, he just dominates. I barely even have any notes for him, because he just does nothing wrong with anything of what he did.
Right.
He just, straight up the invisible ladder, never even slows down, really, just like full force.
Yeah, I have that. It looks, when he was on the circuit board, it looked like he was suspended in water or something. Like, he just was gliding through it like it was no problem. I think I've mentioned once before about like these, when it's these really amazing climbers, a lot of the time with the total upper body obstacles, if you like cut off the bottom half of your TV, it looks like they could just be like walking, like he was barely swinging at all. Like, it just looked like, I don't know, he was doing it walking over a pool of Jell-O or something.
That's what 25 years of rock climbing experience and training gives you, is it gives you complete mastery of your upper body. It's incredible.
Yeah, it was amazing to watch. It didn't even, like you said, it didn't even look like the invisible ladder was a challenge for him. It looked like he was climbing a normal ladder. I just can't even believe it.
Well, here's a guy who can do one finger pinky pull-ups, right? You know,
what?
It's like, that's insane. Yeah, there's a video again. I mean, not to hype the website too much, but there's a video of Brian on the website doing a one finger, pinky finger, one arm pull up. It's inhuman. I mean, imagine that. And he's not like a skinny little, you know, wispy guy. He's a big, meaty guy. And just imagine hanging straight arm off your pinky in a string and doing a full one arm pull up and putting your chin above your pinky. That is insane power.
Yeah, and you know, they do mention it most of the time when Brian is on the screen that he at one point was the person who had gone furthest of anybody. I really even think that's understated. Just like how he really is like one of the top contenders of anyone in the entire field. That was only, I think, like three seasons ago that he had gone the furthest, and he was the person that everybody was looking at as like, this is the guy that's going to finish it. Obviously, you know, Isaac comes in and Jeff comes in, and they managed to do this amazing feat. But as far as I'm concerned, Brian is right up there with Isaac and just as capable.
Oh, of course. Yeah, absolutely. And he's the first team Ninja Warrior champion. He led his team to victory. And there was no luck there.
Yes. Party time.
Yeah. Party time. Yeah. They're coming back for more this year.
Oh, defending the title.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Team to beat.
I also liked what he said to Christine in his interview where he said that he was working on controlling his emotions. And I think that is just the sign of a really mature athlete. It's like, OK, I've got this physical part down. How can I take my athleticism to the next level? And so much of that is mental and emotional. So I really like that he was talking about that and cognizant of that.
Definitely. So next up, we have Jake Murray, the 29-year-old wedding photographer. You know, out of nowhere in the qualifying round, I mentioned that like he's getting a huge spotlight. They seem to really like his jump from the end of stage one last year. And we're getting more of it this time. And for good reason, very, very impressive out on the course. And I really liked his package.
Taryn, there's no excuse for this package.
It was so good. It was about his
this was a waste of my time.
His 1995 Ford Aspire. When it was edited to be this sort of thing where like he's bragging about this like super fancy car and it's a total piece of junk. And I really liked that he said if he did like win the money, he would not invest in a better car. He would just keep running this one into the ground.
This was so silly.
Yeah, Jake is one of the best guys I know. And he comes out and trains with us nonstop, obviously. He's incredible. He's an incredible rock climber, which they don't really focus on, but he's also an incredible rock climber. He's basically one of the Wolf Pack, just like Dan Yeager and Matt Wilder. And he is funny. He is like one of the funniest dudes I have ever met. And he's just got it. He's got that wit. He's got that charisma. And he could be a comedian. You know, I love him. We all love him. He's got us constantly laughing and he keeps it really light. You know, he's really good at being like, yeah, guys, this doesn't matter. And just like clicking his heels, doing a fist bump and then just doing something silly. Wait till you see some of the shenanigans that happen in Vegas. That's all I got to say.
How old is Jake Murray? I don't have it written down.
He is 29.
His car and I are the same age. Fun fact. I was also made in 1995.
Nice. Well, hopefully you run better than his car does.
Only slightly.
Noah, do you know what the headband is about? Is that just like his style?
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of like, remember the movie, The Royal Tannenbaums or whatever, the tennis guy.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. He's just got such a personality. He's a total original, authentic character. And, but you know, it's him. He's not trying to be something that he's not. He's just like a joker, man. He's an incredible skateboarder. He's always been like that punk kid who is also really smart, but also respected people. So, you know, he got away with it. And, He's always a joker who could just, like, you know, do the puppy dog eyes and just get away with whatever. And we just love him for it. We love him to death. And yeah, he's totally, like, just totally a wolf in training. You know, actually, it's funny, when he started training with us, couldn't really keep up with the wolf pack very much. And this was like maybe a couple seasons ago. And now he's just one of the best. I mean, he's an animal. He's super dedicated. You know, you see all the silliness, but you don't realize how incredibly determined and dedicated he is. And he's incredible. He's another guy who could finish the entire thing and do it with a smile and a laugh and make everybody else laugh too.
Yeah, he's definitely somebody I think we've seen a lot of improvement from. He's really sort of come out of nowhere to be a super, super competitor. Yeah. And we really saw it in this finals course. Very impressive. He was a little bit slower and more deliberate this time than he was in the qualifying round, where he just kind of sped through that first half. Despite that, still manages to go very quickly through the course and have time to show off.
I will say the like faces, or when contestants like do dances or little tricks or whatever, that doesn't really do anything for me. But this warped wall, the trick that he did where he went up it and then turned around backwards and then did a backflip to get over the warped wall was like the most impressive thing I've ever seen. Does he practice that a lot? No.
You know, it's funny. It's a funny joke between us all. We definitely talk about what we're going to do on the warped wall this year. And, you know, I started my first year with this big look back and this fist pump. And then we always talk about, like, okay, what's going to happen this year? Who's going to hang by their toes on the warp wall? Who's going to, you know? And so Jake is like the consummate one-upsman. And he just, you know, he kind of keeps it secret because he doesn't want the secret to get out. And of course it blew us away and we're like, dude, that's awesome. And, you know, high five, fist bumps. And it's hilarious. And yeah, of course he, you know, he planned it, right? You know, he was planning it. So there's always a plan. He's always scheming. He's an entertainer. But he keeps it light, you know, and he definitely makes sure that he can get things done. So he's very serious when he needs to be, and then entertainer when he can be. And that was an entertainer moment, and he nailed it. That was so cool.
Yeah. And Akbar is just in total awe, and he says, that's just beautiful. That was beautiful.
Akbar getting misty eyed.
So very, very good run. You know, he gets to the invisible ladder. He does some flips, and they put up, I think it was Brian's time, saying, you know, he can still beat Brian's time. And I was like, what are you talking about? Nobody gets up the invisible ladder that fast. He can't beat Brian's time. And then he flies up the invisible ladder. This technique looked incredible. He was using his entire body the entire way through, and he just went all the way up, no slowing whatsoever, and managed to get the fastest time of the night. Do you know, like, is this how he's practiced on the invisible ladder?
Yeah, so Jake absolutely, you know, when we train at my house, we have this thing called the death machine, which is like this rope that goes over a pulley, and it's got two rings on it. It's like a tread wall, or like a tread invisible ladder, because it doesn't go anywhere, but you could go on it forever. And when he does that, his legs are flying and kicking, and you know, it's funny, but when he brought it out there, it was super effective. And Jaeger does the exact same thing, Dan Jaeger, and so he would have flown up the same way, I'm sure. Ian and Brian, myself, we're a little bit more controlled and slow, but yeah, he dominated. It was so cool to watch him just sprint up that thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And Taryn, you didn't even mention that he got the palm, beautiful, gorgeous, terrific, intelligent run of the night.
Well, how could I forget to mention that?
It's the most important part.
Yeah, that's an honor.
So next up, we get our final montage of the night. First is TC Tronquet. I think he calls himself Bigfoot, because he has very wide feet, but, apparently it was his hands that let him down on the swinging spikes. Finally, Matt Wilder, the, AI consultant, which I thought was a very interesting job title. who failed at the hourglass drop and does qualify for Vegas.
Matt's one of the best climbers in the world, along with Ian. And he's not, you know, he's had some shoulder injuries in the past. He missed a year of Ninja. He's actually going to be on my team for Team Ninja Warrior. I've been friends with him since the year 2000. He actually married my wife and I.
Oh, wow.
He's an incredible guy. He's a very close friend. He's very close with all the Wolfpack, trains with us, and he's a really confident, really smart guy. And, you know, he's got a full-time job. He's a PhD in machine learning. He's like the real thing. He's like Goodwill Hunting or something. He's a super, super genius guy. And he doesn't even get to train that much for Ninja. And so his performance, you know, we're always like, you know, he's off the couch half the time. And we're like, dude, if you just trained, you know, you're already one of the strongest climbers in the world. Like, just train a little bit. Like, if you YouTube Matt Wilder, it'll blow your mind. He's like Ian Dory, and he's just unbelievable. He's another one of those undercover agents who's super humble and won't talk much about himself. And he's amazing. He's amazing.
That's awesome. Very cool. As I mentioned, very cool job. That's right up my alley. So I'll be looking for Matt Wilder in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
Next up, we have Adam Arnold, the 26-year-old maintenance technician. We join him at the Warped Wall. He was a walk-on last year and was only one of only two people to complete last year's city finals. And he was looking, they had mentioned before this, like, oh, it's going to be a race between Adam Arnold and Lauren Ball. Who's going to get the faster time? And he was speeding through this course.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is unbelievable. And just so you know, Brian, Ian, Megan, and Matt and Jaeger and Jake, all our friends, when they saw Adam Arnold go through the course, they were like, wow, he's redlining. You know, you cannot basically run your fastest through the course because most human beings, all the athletes, doesn't matter who you are, you get pumped, you get tired. And the course is just long enough that you cannot run through the course. Well, at least until we saw Adam Arnold do it. And those guys, like, you know, all my fellow Wolves were like, minds were blown. Like, you know, generally it's hard to impress the top guys. Well, we were all pretty impressed. And, Brian was like, I couldn't believe it. Like, they were nonstop. When they got back from Indy, they were like, oh my God, Adam Arnold didn't even slow down. He just, so that's like a mark of athleticism that is just, he's a genetic freak. I mean, he's awesome. Adam Arnold is mad props, super big hat tip. Really, he impressed the Wolfpack Ninjas. He's an animal.
Yeah. Speaking of being a genetic freak, I don't normally write stuff like this down, but his abs are ridiculous. Just worth noting.
Yeah, he was made very well.
Yes, so he does. He gets the fastest time of the night. During the run, though, one of my favorite, I think, in a while, interactions between Akbar and Matt. Matt says during the circuit board, such a simple design, but so insidious. And Akbar says, that's simple to you? That isn't simple. That's crazy. And then Matt just doesn't respond. Matt's just like, oh man.
I mean, Akbar is right.
Yeah, you just like totally pointed it out. Like, oh,
that called him out.
I mean, that's one of the most complicated obstacles we've ever seen. Can you call that simple?
And Matt's like, it's not even worth it.
Yeah. Maybe Matt's just a genius. That's simple to him. He just solves Rubik's cubes while everybody's running the course.
You know, Matt is a pretty smart guy. We had him on the podcast. I think he was the second episode or something. He was either second or third or something like that. And he's a doctor. He's an MD, just like me. And he kind of dropped out. You know, he got his medical degree and then decided not to practice. He decided to become a comedian, and he is a really, really smart guy for what it's worth. So it's interesting. It's funny how him and Akbar are the odd couple. Not that Akbar is not super intelligent. I'm just saying they're the odd couple.
Much like me and Taryn. I won't say who's who.
Well, clearly we know that Matt is very intelligent because he's a big Big Brother fan, just like me.
Are you saying that you're the Matt and I'm the Akbar?
Clearly.
Because you're the Big Brother expert?
Yes. The Big Brother experts and intelligence go hand in hand. So
great minds.
Yeah. Oi. He also knocks my boy into 15th place. I'm sorry. Andrew Ruiyori is now on the bubble.
Yes.
After this run.
And Lita's biting her nails.
I am so nervous.
And Lauren Ball is the final competitor here. You've got to imagine that he's going to do pretty well. He had the fastest time in qualifying and is always a very, very good and consistent athlete on the course. He's competed in every season of American Ninja Warrior. And just amazing body control from Lauren Ball. But is a very disappointing run here.
Yeah.
He starts off with this very strange opening where he brings out a chair and then he sits down in the chair and then he gets up and then he kicks the chair. And then I was very confused about what the thing was there. Do you know,
yeah,
Noah?
There was no payoff to this bit.
Well, you know, Lauren's got a funny sense of humor, and there's always an inside kind of joke with Lauren, and Lauren's another one of these guys who's, we love him, and he's a real good, humble, amazing athlete. And when he went out there with the chair, yeah, I think it was a little bit like, okay, what's going on now? And I think sometimes it works, but it's not quite like Jake Murray works. And so it was a little, I agree with you. It was like it wasn't quite as rad, but at the same time, like, because I know him, for me, it was like, oh, that's amazing. That's awesome. That's so funny. But I think that's like, you kind of have to know Lauren, and you don't have to know Jake at all to get Jake instantly, like goofball Jake. So
yeah.
Yeah. But no, it was an interesting kind of way to come on the scene, but it was funny.
I thought it was performance art.
yeah
totally. I mean,
he is a performance artist.
Just watching Lauren Ball run any course is performance art. He is amazing. But yeah, as I mentioned, gets to the rolling log, and again it seems like it's like he lets go a little too early, or just gets a little disoriented, and he just goes straight into the water off of the rolling log, and very, very disappointing finish to his city finals run.
Yeah, I do. I mean, as much as I was rooting for the Canine Ninja, I do really hate being in that spot where you have to like root against someone to have your favorite make it. So I didn't feel like I was rooting against him. I was really disappointed. I think he was just so eager and just wanted to fly off of that log and get to the next obstacle and didn't really know where he was. It ends the episode on a very weird note. Like, overall, a very upbeat episode just kind of comes to a screeching halt.
Yeah, I think they do that because they don't want it also to be, oh, well, the first guy's going to fall and the last guy is obviously going to get the fastest time. And that's, you know, whether or not you know it, they show all the runs in whatever order they want. I mean, we don't run in the same order that they show on TV. They rearrange it. They change it. All the athletic feats are real, but there's definitely some creative, leeway that they take to make the show the best show possible. And I think that, you know, they want to build the excitement and show guys like Brian and Ian Adam Arnold and the rest and Jake towards the end of the show, you know, but in the beginning of the show, you know, they want to get some of the other competitors out of the way, but they can't do that to where it's so formulaic that everybody knows. So you're right. It was kind of a weird ending, but at the same time, you know, they've done that before, right? They've showed people fall and it's like, oh dang. And that's part of the show is, it's crushing when it's all the hopes and dreams are just done and it's another year. You got to wait for your chance to be the next American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, I think that's something that they have done really well. I've noticed it this season in particular, where they really try to buck their own formula, where, you know, they're able to make me really nervous when Drew Dreschel is running, when obviously Drew Dreschel isn't falling anywhere. And then they're able to sort of save Lauren Ball for last. You expect him to go really far, and then out of nowhere, he falls. And I mean, I know firsthand now, their creative license when it comes to the editing, because I was in Philadelphia and, they used me as a crowd reaction shot when, for the finals night, and they used it for the qualifying night.
Yeah.
Cause Taryn was trying to tell me what color shirt he was wearing and it kept changing.
Yeah, I was like, blue shirt is finals night, so look for the black shirt. And then I was in the blue shirt and I was like, whoa.
Well, check this out. And most people obviously don't catch this, but the ninjas, we are laughing our behinds off, because imagine this. And this was one of the best ones of all time. This is so good. Brent Stephenson was running the course, and and they showed a bunch of ninjas cheering him on. And one of the ninjas cheering him on was Brent Stephenson. And oh, it was so funny. I think most people missed it, but if you go back to last year, and I forget if it was qualifiers or what, but you can see Brent watching Brent, and we were like, "Whoa, Brent, you really are a ninja!" Because, you know, the ninjas are, we're constantly talking. We have a huge, massive ninja Facebook thread, and it's a constant, ongoing conversation. It's a big family, you know. So it was really funny, and you're right. There's a lot of creative license.
That's amazing.
That is incredible. Yeah. So we see Lauren Ball go down, and they cut to Rue Yorie's face, and I tracked his response here to, like, this is my best guess, because it seemed like he went from shocked, like, oh my God, to like sad for Lauren Ball, but then happy because he realized, oh my God, I made it. And then like, right. Oh wait, I'm not supposed to be happy. I'm not happy. And then he goes, well, no, whatever. I'm happy. I made it.
Yeah.
But how did Angus feel?
Right?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. I'm with Christine. I just want to watch the dog.
Squirrel.
Yeah, that's what Angus was thinking.
Yes, so that is our episode. I thought, good one. Good episode here. I liked the circuit board a lot.
Great episode.
And always great to see the Wolfpack and all of the great athletes. You know, the Lauren Ball run was unfortunate, but yeah, I thought it was a good episode.
Yeah, I loved this episode. I really had two people in mind that I was going in really rooting for, and that was Megan and Rue Yorie, and both of my people made it, so I really liked it. And it was another one of those episodes where it wasn't one obstacle that took out everyone. That's what we always talk about makes for, it's kind of a boring episode if it's just every single person is felled by the same thing. There was a whole bunch of obstacles that took out different people here.
Yeah. So moving on, I wanted to talk to Noah a little bit here. Because if anybody listening to this podcast does not yet listen to the Wolfpack Ninja podcast, what are you doing? What are you doing with your life? They're way better than us.
Yeah, what are you still doing here?
Man, this was a lot of fun doing this wrap up. You guys got a great recipe here. This is, everybody should be tuning into this. It's great to, you know, kind of think it through and get the reactions. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, so I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Wolfpack Ninjas. And like, I know that you, like, a big part of why you do it and why you do the podcast and why you have the website is because you have this message that you want to spread, especially to kids, about being healthier. And
yeah.
I really appreciate that message. Can you just talk about it a little more?
Yeah, well, you know, right now in this country, 1 in 3 children are overweight or obese. And, you know, 2/3 of adults, over 70% are overweight or obese. And it's something that, you know, has a lot to do with the foods we eat, the inactivity, the lifestyles, the busy work lives, all the soda pop we drink. And so, you know, we want to create awareness about this. We want to get kids having fun and trying to be ninjas, you know, because they naturally, that's what they want to do, right? That's their default state. They want to be ninjas. And so we address this a lot. We provide a lot of education. We say, okay, this is how you do it. We put on events. We're putting together a Wolfpack Ninja Tour, and we're going to be going all around the country with obstacle courses so that kids can do a Ninja Warrior like obstacle course with truss and the full thing, but, you know, with their, for their level, and get them psyched. And at the same time, we're talking to them about, you know, eating a little bit healthier and cutting out soda, take it out of the house. It's a horrible, horrible thing. It's got caffeine and sugar and watering down juice and all these little tidbits of advice for families. And then, you know, also on the podcast, we talk about that, but you know, mostly we just interview all the top ninjas. This week we did Casey Catanzaro, and we've done John Stewart. He's coming up in the next couple weeks. We've done Brent Stephenson. We've done, I mean, we've done everybody, Nick Coolidge, Josh Levin, Jesse Graff, you know, we've done obviously, and it's Megan, me, Brian, and Ian. And we sit around and we make jokes, and we talk about really inspiring, you know, stories in these ninjas' lives. And it's a great time. It's really fun. And it's every Tuesday. It's the Wolfpack Ninja Podcast, free on iTunes.
Yeah, I was listening to the Casey Catanzaro interview today during my workout, because that's how I motivate myself to keep going. It was really, really interesting. You have a very great interview style, so people should definitely get on that.
Yeah, I mean, interviewing, I guess, is kind of what I've been doing for the last 15 years as an ER doc. You know, I walk into a room and I start asking questions and trying to get to the heart of the matter and trying to find out what's wrong or what's the most important information or data that I can use to try and figure out a problem. And it's really cool to get into these ninjas' heads and get to know my fellow ninjas a bit better. And, you know, it's incredible how open and honest and confident all the ninjas are and talking about things that are hard for them or things that were, you know, good or bad in their life and what they learned from it and what kids can do to become ninjas like they are. And I think it's a great message. So I'm really lucky to have the honor and be in the position to be the one asking the questions. It's really quite an honor.
Yeah. Something that you've done that I've really appreciated is that, like, almost every single person you have on, you ask them about the Isaac Jeff situation and, get their opinion on that. And like, that's obviously like a difficult question to answer. And it's like something that hits kind of close to home for you, with Isaac being part of the Wolfpack. But it's always handled really deftly and it's gotten some like really great responses.
Yeah. That's quite the topic. And, it's tough. Those guys were friends and, you know, now they don't talk as much, and it's like a real, you know, it's a real emotional kind of thing. It gets pretty emotional on American Ninja Warrior, you know, because it's just nonstop adrenaline rush, and you're cheering for each other, and you want everybody to do their best until the very last moment, where you want your guy to do the best, or you want that guy to do the best, and everybody kind of has to choose a side. And nobody thought there would be two guys racing at the rope. Such amazing athletes, two great, great guys. Not only great athletes, but great guys. And, you know, I mean, it was, they're both champions, but one guy walked away with $1 million. The other guy climbed the rope first. And it's tricky. It's a tricky situation. It made a lot of confusion, I think, for fans out there.
Yeah. And I think I don't know if this is confirmed, but I think I heard that they've changed the rules now, and that if multiple people make it up, they will split the prize. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, I can confirm that for you. They will split the prize if multiple people make it up, which is, I believe, the way it's always been in Japan. But it's not the way the rules were last year. So Jeff walked away with zero.
But he walked away with our hearts.
Yes, he did.
Oh, he did. You know, he did walk away with our hearts. What an animal. What a machine.
Yeah, I had the chance to meet him in Philadelphia when I was there. And he's just like such a nice guy. He was like very accommodating. I was very awkward when I went up to him and introduced myself as a Ninja Warrior podcaster. But he was great and super, super friendly.
Yeah, he's got he's a family man, and he knows he doesn't think of himself as some special guy. He's a really cool guy. He's a really, really great friend to all the other ninjas. And he dug deep. You know, Isaac, the whole thing was easy. But for Jeff was like, you know, most of the rest of us, where it was, just barely did it.
Yeah, that moment at the end of stage three where he's just barely hanging on to that bar, it's one of my favorite moments in Ninja Warrior history.
Oh, in sports history, man, it's amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah. All right, Lita, do you have any other questions for Noah before we take off?
What's it like being on the other side? Noah, did you have a good experience being the interviewee?
Yeah. Oh man, you guys did a great job, and we'll try and hype it up on our podcast. And it's really cool because we're trying to do just a ton of stuff to grow awareness about this cause. And you know, we actually have some eBooks, and we've got the podcast. We're trying to put together this tour. We're trying to tackle this huge obstacle that's outside of Ninja Warrior, and you know, there is a big entertainment value to the whole thing, but we can also use this for good, you know, and to tackle a bigger obstacle. And you guys are, you know, doing that because you're propagating just the excitement of the show, and you know, Lita talking about how Megan is such a great role model, and it's totally true. And you know, that's the whole thing, that's why I'm honored to be, you know, a ninja, and it's fun to be interviewed. It's definitely fun to be an interviewer for me. But to be an interviewee, it's like I get to kind of share in the, yeah, you know, it's really fun to be a ninja, and it's fun to be a part of this kind of like a movement, you know, and I think that you guys are doing a great job with helping to spread the love and the message. And so good on you. And thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Yeah, thank you. Where can we find you on social media so that everybody can go follow?
Oh, thank you. Yeah. No. Okay. So on Twitter, I'm ClimberDoc, and on Boulder, or sorry, on Instagram, I'm BoulderDoc, BoulderDoc. And then, of course, you can get the Wolfpack. We're Wolfpack Ninja on Twitter and Wolfpack Ninja Warrior on Instagram. And of course, always just go to our website, wolfpackninjas.com. We've got a couple of training eBooks that'll help people get training. We've got one for the kids. And then we've got the podcast. So you can always find us there. And we always, you know, are hooking you up with all the top ninjas and their socials and a way to follow all the heroes out there. It's really such a positive experience to be a part of.
Awesome. And yes, and you, as always, you can find us. I am at Armstrong Terran on Twitter, and Lita is at Lita Tweeted. Please find us on iTunes and subscribe, American Ninja Warrior Rehap Ups. You can also subscribe to the, overarching feed, the reality TV Rehap Ups. You can get all those other great shows like the Rehappy Hour, which we just found out is, number 6 in Canada on the iTunes rankings. So, yeah. We're Canada famous there, as well as the Bachelorette podcast, the Challenge podcast. They're all great. And also please leave us a review on iTunes. It's very helpful. If you do, we might read it out loud. I believe we have one queued up, Lita.
Yes, we do. This is from Kleiner721. This show is hilarious. Lita throws shade at every contestant while Taryn struggles to describe even the simplest of obstacles. This is podcasting gold.
Thank you so much. You really nailed our personalities.
Yes, and you're welcome for the floating board description. I think
nailed
I changed.
It.
Yeah. yes, thank you so much, Noah, for joining us. And thank you to all the listeners for listening to us. We will see you next time.